Top Bed Talk.
Hello and welcome to Top Bed Talk. We are here in Munich, Germany for the Euroanesthesia 2024 meeting. It's the annual congress of the European Society of Anesthesiology and Intensive Care, or ISIAC. I'm Desiree Chapel. I'm your host today, and I'm joined by the lovely, the magnificent, as we have been establishing here, my wonderful co-host, Kate Leslie. I think you're blushing, Kate.
I most probably am. I'm just Kate from Australia, and I'm having a great time here at the ISIAC meeting. We just heard from Michelle Struess, the chair of the scientific committee, about the years of work that went into the scientific program for the meeting and their focus on diversity and inclusion and sustainability and the trainees.
Yeah.
And we're really grateful to ISIAC for giving us the opportunity to hear about everything that the organization's doing.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. We've had great conversations about the content of the meeting, the different committees, and all the different pieces that go into a large organization like this. We just wanted to give a huge thanks for getting us here in the exhibit hall to be able to do this. So thank you. And thank you to all of our sponsors to make Top Med Talk free and open access to the world. Without them, we could not do this. So thank you. Thank you. Well, we want to jump right in because everyone, this is a very busy meeting for everybody here. And we love the fact that people have given their time between sessions and all those things to come and talk to us. So our next guest, we have Marcus Klimek and Joanna Berger Estilita. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Desiree.
Yeah. Marcus, why don't you start and tell us a little bit more about yourself.
As you might hear, I have a German accent.
You local then.
I'm originally from Cologne, Germany. Huh. But for 23 years right now, I'm working in Rotterdam, the Netherlands, at Erasmus University Medical Center. I'm the vice chairman of the anesthesia department, and I'm responsible for the residency training program there as well. I'm the director of the residency training. Inside ISIAC, I'm the freshly elected chair of the examination committee. And in my daily clinical practice, I'm dedicated neuroanesthesiologist for awake brain surgery. That's my very special baby. And all the other stuff in neurooperating theaters is happening as well.
All right. Wonderful. And Jonah, what about you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm originally Portuguese. But I was brought up in an Irish school for girls.
I'll say the accent. I was really trying to hone in on that.
And I did all my training in Portugal for intensive care and anesthesia. And then suddenly, 10 years ago, I met a Swiss. So out of love, I left Portugal and I went to Switzerland. And I've been working and practicing in Bern, Switzerland. So I'm an anesthesiologist clinically. And then I do a lot of research in medical education. And one of my areas of interest is not only medical education per se, but also a lot of gender equity in anesthesiology.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, why don't we kick this off by talking a little bit about the Committee on Education and, you know, your involvement with the organization at that level?
The Committee of Education is necessary if you want to perform an examination. You can't go unprepared to the European examination. And until last year, Joanna and I, we have been sharing together the Part 2 Examination Committee, which is a subcommittee of the Examination Committee. The European exam has several parts. Part 1 and Part 2 are the mandatory parts, but we also have some preparational parts before. And Part 2 is a VIVA exam, and which is considered quite challenging. The pass rates navigate between 50 and 60%, so quite a reasonable amount of people fail in it. And we think that a good success at the exam is based on a good preparation. And having worked together in this subcommittee the last years, we are very happy as both being chairs of the respective committees right now on continuing our very close cooperation, which makes us sitting here together.
It was a very nice synergism and that you took the examinations committee and I took the chair of the education and training. It just makes sense that we work together and we partner up because we have to prepare anesthetists to sit the examination, not only to sit the examination, but one of the alleyways of the platform and of the academy is actually to prepare candidates for the examination.
So for the benefit of our international listeners, we should have a quick chat about anesthesia training in Europe, because it's different, for example, to training in Australia, New Zealand, UK and Ireland, where it's a specialist medical college and a national curriculum and training program and assessment program. In Europe, there are separate training programs in cities and parts of cities and countries. And they're not implementing the same curriculum, is my understanding. But they're also giving out their own qualifications. But what you're offering is an overarching qualification that I assume you hope will give the candidates more credibility and more portability of their
currently there are a few countries inside Europe who make the European exam as we provide it mandatory. Malta is a good example. From the whole European exam is mandatory to become a specialist in Malta, but Malta is the only island which goes the only state inside Europe, not only the only island, the only state which goes that far. And other countries inside and outside Europe have made the part one, the written exam, mandatory or equivalent to the national exams. And this already helps with the recognition of the exam. Even if it's not yet written in contracts with the respective countries and societies, still having the diploma at the end distinguishes the owner of the diploma from the average anesthesiologist.
It sounds like a great program, and it sounds like you're supporting it with educational resources. Can you tell us a bit about your work there?
Well, we have actually the committee that is supporting more the examinations is something that is not related to any of us, but is standing in between, which is the basic clinical sciences course and the VIVAC, which is sort of like a viva voce where people can train. So these are the two specific offers that the society has to train for the examination. We also have other things coming up. We also have a book which was written to prepare for the examination. So there are a lot of sources to accommodate several learners and learning styles. From the educational committee, we have to have a broader view. And you mentioned about the training in Europe. There is another entity, which is the European Board of Anesthesiology, which basically sets the tone for what is needed. And then we pick up on that and we do our activities in order to align with that. For example, and you told it yourself, and it's exactly so, we're so many countries and there's so much variability. But for example, in simulation, there's at the moment a project coming up, which is the Atstein recommendation, so that we can uniform across all European countries. What are the regulations regarding simulation within the anesthesia training? So this is one step where the educational committee has a stronger role, let's say.
Are you implementing or recommending any work-based assessments?
Absolutely.
And can you tell us a bit about that?
So work-based assessments is something that comes again from the EBA, and it is something that we implement. Then we recommend it and we will train people to do that. But again, this is at a local level, so the society can only recommend it.
So work-based assessments can be things like case-based discussions, mini CEX, DOPS, that sort of thing, but also annual discussions with goal setting and yes, you know, evaluation of how the trainee is going.
Yeah, absolutely. In Switzerland, and I think in Germany too, and the Netherlands, this is standard practice. But for example, in more peripheral countries in Europe, this is not standard practice yet. But again, that's not, the society is responsible for offering all the education, but we're not the organ that sort of like governs that.
Can you tell us which language or languages the examination is implemented in and which languages are offered in the educational resources?
For the exam in the written part, we have 11 languages, and I was not prepared that this question might come. I tried to get them around, but to give some examples, of course, the main languages of Europe, which is English, German, French, Spanish, Italian. We also have Turkish, we have Chinese, we have Romanian, we have Polish.
Scandinavian?
The Scandinavian languages, and I'm missing one. So we have 11 languages for the part one at least. For the VIVA exam, we offer it in English, in German, in Spanish, in Portuguesian language, and in the Scandinavian languages, and in Turkish, and in Romanian since 2024. So we want to have a medical exam, not a language exam. And
yes,
for those who have a language barrier, we try to provide it in as many languages as possible. On the other side, we want to avoid that it becomes a kind of nepotism. Because we have from the same language, we can help each other. For all our VIVA exams, it's mandatory that examiners speaking the respective language are working outside the respective country. For our Romanian exam, we take Romanian-speaking anesthesiologists from elsewhere and couple them one by one on every table for the VIVA exam with the local one, so that there's no serious concern about nepotism.
That must be extraordinarily difficult to identify, train, support,
yes,
and then manage the logistics of your examination.
You're addressing a very important point. Very close cooperation, of course, with our staff from the ESAIC office in Brussels. And when a country wants to set up an exam in a certain language, there are a lot of issues which must be clarified. Do we have enough examiners? How are they trained? And this morning I gave a lecture here about the difference between an optimum and a maximum of the number of examinations we can hold every year. And we are very close to the optimum because it all requires logistic resources, the people who do it, the days you have in a year, the people you can examine on a day. There are some limits, but we also, of course, want to keep up the quality of the exam as high as possible, as standardized as possible. And this only works with a good train the trainers, train the examiners program, good feedback. Every exam has a senior examiner and a chairperson which observe how the exams are going and gives comment and feedback to the examiners. We don't evaluate the candidates, we only evaluate the examiners.
Joanna, have you been an examiner and have you got any insights?
I've been an examiner for 14 years now.
And you could do it in about four different languages from
yes,
the sound of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So amazing. This is one of the characteristics. We're always looking for examiners because the demand is increasing. So if anyone is listening to this, and most of us, we're bilingual or trilingual. So if you're interested in becoming an examiner and you're listening to this, please go online to our website, to the leadership opportunities, and enroll.
Yeah. Wow. We're going to enroll, Desiree?
Well, unfortunately, I can only speak American.
Kentucky.
No, that's absolutely fantastic. I was just thinking the logistics and all the things. That's a huge resource, though. Yeah. That's an amazing, yeah, amazing thing to be able to offer.
Yeah, it's the second biggest sub-department of the ESAIC office's examination.
Wow, that's great.
I wanted to pick up on something Marco said regarding, and you asked, well, are there so many languages offered to the exam? And there are, but in the context of the education committee, there's only English. And there is a reason for this, although we know that this is an obstacle and we're working on it. But the fact is, when we're dealing with examinations, we are centered on the candidate. So we really want to take all the barriers out so that the candidate can show their science. On the educational committee, we're focusing on the science, and the language of science is English. So we all have most of our resources in English, so that is able and available for everyone. And then these people also have to process in their own language and prepare for the examination. This is a matter of equity and inclusion.
Yeah.
This is one thing that it means, like, it's offered to everyone on the same page. Let's put it that way. Another thing that it is important for me is to develop this online availability of content, because this is also a matter of inclusivity. It means that if you are in Scandinavia, or if you are in Portugal or Spain, you can access it anytime, anywhere, 24 hours a day. For young mothers or young parents who have had a child and who have very irregular sleeping patterns, they can access it also, without any kind of barrier. So this is very important. I think the e-learning now is one of the strategies that we can use, and that we will increase in the next years, because it is one of the pillars of inclusivity in education.
Yeah, and you actually have developed some e-learning modules.
Yes.
Correct? Can you tell us just quickly about them?
Well, at the moment, what we are doing is we have every single Tuesday an educational activity throughout the year, be it a Try Me quiz, be it a podcast, a webinar. We always have something going on new every Tuesday. And this obviously goes into a repository, which is our academy, and is sorted out into pathways, learning pathways. So that if you're more interested, if you're a seasoned professional.
New word. Seasoned.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure. Like
experienced
professional, you will probably be more interested in some pathway. And if you're preparing for the examination, you'll go into another one, so that people
know a bit how to navigate the website and the platform.
That's great. Well, both of you, thank you so much for all you do. That's just incredible work. And the leadership is so very important in this space. So
did you want to say? Oh, it's such a large organization and so diverse. And I'm just so impressed with what you're up to. It's fantastic. And maybe I should join up and
please join
the conversation.
Do you speak multiple languages?
No, I can order beer in a number of European languages.
I think that might work.
Well, the good thing is that many exams are offered in English and in other languages.
There you go. Yes, very important. Well, again, congratulations on the work that you do. Thank you so much for sharing it here. And hopefully, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you have any interest at all, please do reach out. It sounds like
please do.
You know, a wonderful.
Well, we're just recruiting Leslie at the moment, and then we see what's going on.
Global.
That's right. Work one by one. All right.
Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity and spread the word. Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. So thank you guys so much. And thank you for listening to Top Med Talk. Again, you can always find us at topmedtalk.com. We're on social media. We're on your favorite podcatcher. We are on YouTube too. So if you came across this on YouTube, give us a thumbs up, subscribe. Follow the links to all of our wonderful partner organizations. That's so incredibly important. And thanks again for listening. Cheers, everybody.
Top Med Talk.
Thanks for downloading Top Med Talk. Don't forget to subscribe. Check us out on YouTube and, of course, on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and X. Also, it's important to remember that Top Med Talk is the broadcasting arm of EPOM, evidence-based perioperative medicine. We'd love you to find out more about that, and the way to do that is epom.org. Check out our website and find out about some of the incredible conferences we're going to be arranging across the year. epom.org.